Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this roundtable discussion, I'm joined by my sister Kay. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion around Daredevil Season 2. In addition to spoiling that season, we may spoil the previous season, of course, plus Jessica Jones, the Avenger movies, and other parts of the Marvel cinematic stuff, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and whatnot. 13 episodes, the whole thing dropped at once, as per Netflix.
Well, and they don't limit their episodes to 42 minutes. So you warned me up front one episode was a full 60 minutes, in fact.
They tend to vary between, I'm not sure what the lowest was, maybe 48 minutes to 60, 61 minutes, sometimes a few minutes over an hour. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are no commercials. You've got about a minute of opening credits.
Yeah.
About 45 seconds of which is executive producer credits, I think. We counted, what, 14?
Yeah.
Incredible number of executive producers. But the Netflix shows, in my opinion, are essentially about a 12-hour movie in episodic format, and it views much like a book.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, we've talked about the fact that it really feels like the novel experience.
Very full, substantive chapters that have a beginning, a middle, a nice end, you know, either on a reveal or a good story point, and then it picks up with the next one.
Well, and frequently the end of an episode and the beginning of the next fit together the way chapter endings do. In one case, they came right up to an end where it's, okay, is he going to do X or Y? Cut to closing credits. And in the next one, we start with people riding motorcycles all over town. And I'm going, I don't think time has elapsed. What have we done? Well, we've actually backtracked a few seconds. So instead of being up in the apartment with Elektra and Daredevil, we're now down on the streets with the Yakuza, who were coming to attack them. And we're arriving at that same scene with those characters instead of them.
Another time they ended on one scene, picked up a little bit before and kind of got to that same scene from another vantage point, was when Frank first gets to prison.
Yes.
And there was also another scene where it ends on a scene, and literally the next episode picks up with that. And it's funny because it gives the illusion of a lot of time elapsing, even though really, you know, it's not much time, but it plays so much better that way than if they had finished that scene in the previous episode.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because that indeterminateness, it's basically they throw the flashlight down into the endless pit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
did
oh,
you hear
there it
hit bottom?
Yeah.
Did you hear it hit bottom?
End cut credits, to, yeah. Next scene, or next episode, really.
Yeah.
So they did some good stuff there. I like the way it flows like a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain through lines throughout the entire season. This season, it was very much the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole Yakuza and all of that stuff going on that really didn't get introduced until about four episodes in for that part.
Yeah. I mean, it had some ties back to first season.
It did, but I guess in my point, the start of the thing was all Frank Castle, Punisher, and that trails off a little bit, but doesn't go entirely away.
Well,
about two, three episodes from the end, and about two, three episodes from the beginning, the Elektra stuff goes forward and carries off at the end.
I'm just trying to think through how much the Yakuza stuff does or doesn't tie into the drug trade.
Well, it
that
absolutely
was part of the Punisher thing. So I guess Yakuza was subtly in the back seat and we weren't aware of it in those first episodes is my question.
I see the question. I'm not sure I'd have to go back. It's, again, the problem with absorbing 12 hours.
In 24.
Yeah, well, about 24, you're right. Again, marathoning the stuff through where one thing starts and stops, blurs a little, and then just, it's a lot of story to take in.
It's so immersive, and at one point they were saying, you know, Punisher was after the three groups that were at war in the park the day his family died. I'm sitting here going, three? okay, I know he's been getting revenge on the Irish. We've seen him attack them twice. I know he's been getting revenge on the motorcycle gang because we went to the bar multiple times.
We saw both of those. We heard about the other but never really saw.
We went and found the bodies of the cartel in the meatpacking place.
That's right. We see the aftermath.
And it took me forever to remember that scene. And because we saw really so little of the cartel stuff, and I think the scene in the hospital where Foggy talked the two guys out of fighting.
Yeah.
Was part of the cartel plot.
No, I would agree with that. And again, it was a good character arc over the season for just a ton of characters. Foggy, yeah. Karen, the editor at the New York Bulletin, who was just almost a throwaway character first season, just gets so much great screen time. Not tons of screen time, but what he has is brilliant.
This is the kind of show where, on the one hand, I want to say some characters are a dime a dozen. You know, Mahoney has a partner in the cop car. Stuff like that. These are characters we see, we recognize, we know they're in each episode. And to me, the editor at the newspaper last season was kind of one step above Mahoney's partner because he had dialogue. He was more involved than that.
He had a name. He had a dialogue. He had a...
Yeah, function.
Well, not just a function, but enough of a personality or viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Mahoney's partner is female.
Yes.
Doesn't really say anything throughout the entire run.
Well, and there were a few times when I actually wanted her to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I guess my point is, because they populate this series with so many characters, some of which do speak and some of which don't, but you wish they would. Well, in like the night nurse's fellow nurse.
Yeah.
And a few in there.
And there are a couple that only last for a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Groden or whatever the guy's name is.
Grotto.
Grotto. At the beginning. Big deal for a couple episodes. Then, forgotten about by the end almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in some respects, he served such a great function for the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked that getting to know Grotto helped us get to know the Punisher.
Well, again, the Punisher arc, it was a great season for that character. They did just a wonderful job with him.
They made him far more three-dimensional than Fisk was back in season one, for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And for a character in the comics, it's basically, he's a military guy, he's got a gun, he shoots, mobsters or whatever. They gave a good motivational backstory, you get to care about him. They do a lot on where does vigilanteism go too far and not far enough, almost.
Yes.
So they played that aspect between Daredevil and Punisher really well.
Well, and I liked some of the scenes he had with Karen, like in the hospital, when he's telling her, you never have to fear me. You were never in danger because I've figured out you are a good person.
Well, it's funny because the Punisher's arc over this season is not radically different from Daredevil's in the first season. In so much as we get introduced, he gets a little bit more structure to how he does stuff, and at the end you finally see him in full costume.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to spin the Punisher off into a season, I'd certainly check it out.
Yeah, and I didn't expect to have that feeling going in.
Oh, me neither. I mean, the Punisher is a character that's gone through varying levels of popularity in the comics to the point of having like 4 or 5 titles at one point.
Well, and going back to what you were saying about, they were showing the differences and similarities between Daredevil and the Punisher and stuff, and they were at odds, they tried working together and various things. In that final episode, when Daredevil is grieving and fighting simultaneously, and Punisher kind of comes out of nowhere and has his back.
Yeah.
That was excellent for Punisher, as well as Daredevil.
Well, and it was also a marked contrast to the earlier fight scene where it's basically, you can't cross the line and that aspect where Daredevil is very much lecturing kind of Punisher on you don't kill, you don't have the right, whatever. And that particular scene earlier on felt very much like the comics.
Mm-hmm.
The later scene where Daredevil is kind of on the rooftop fighting a couple of ninja and Frank is just picking them off. So, Daredevil can go after the main bad guy. It played well. I thought it was a great scene. However, it's the kind of thing in the comics there should have been ramifications later of thank you but don't kill kind of a...
Yeah, well, it's very un-Daredevil, but that's part of why I point out he was grieving.
Yeah, oh yeah, for and the mindset the character was in at the time, because mm-hmm. Elektra had just died, and the death of Elektra was interesting because they kill her with the sides, very much like how she dies in the comics, the key difference being it was...
Nobu?
Bullseye.
Oh, I see.
In the comics that did it, whereas it was the guy from the hand here. But they hadn't actually, they did introduce Bullseye last season.
Mm.
No, I'm...
In the movie.
I was thinking the movie. You're right. Okay. You're right.
Thank you.
I was thinking Colin Farrell. It's like, yeah. No, that wasn't last season. That was the movie. They all blur together.
What I loved about Elektra's death, and there wasn't much... No, I'm kidding. I didn't want her to die. That's all I'm saying.
She'll get better.
What I did love about her death was that she had all that inner conflict going on of people are telling me I'm bad, people mm-hmm. tell me I should be better, all these things going on. And she flat out says it as she's gasping her last breath. I finally know what it is to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Because she died to save Matt.
Definitely died a heroic death.
And I thought that was beautifully done.
I'm expecting her character to come back next season.
Interesting.
I'm expecting the whole bit with the hand is far from done.
Okay.
We never found out what the huge pit was for.
Agreed.
So I think there's more going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were enough scenes with the night nurse basically telling Daredevil, you need help, that they're starting to set the scene for the Defenders very subtly.
Now, quite frankly, I would be happy to watch a season of The Night Nurse, where each episode is a different character coming to her for help.
Absolutely.
She's a fantastic character. She's now out our own because she's quit working at the hospital.
And I'm wondering if in Luke Cage we get a little bit more of what's going on with her mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
They did some other good crossover stuff with the law firm from Jessica Jones getting referenced here a couple of times. And a guest star or two showing up from there.
Yeah.
And they reference Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. I mean, the Netflix stuff is slowly very much taking shape, getting some crossovers there.
Mm-hmm.
Some subtle, some just mentions. Again, when we're at the New York Bulletin office, we get reference to the Stark Towers getting destroyed in the Battle of New York. Again, references mm-hmm. to the Battle of New York from the Avengers stuff. And there's not a lot of mention of stuff outside of the Netflix arena.
True.
No real mention of Iron Man other than the Roxxon Corporation, which showed up quite a bit. But Iron Man, Cap, Hulk, Thor, never really mentioned. But I'm wondering if all of this stuff that was going on in Hell's Kitchen is going to get referenced in the Captain America Civil War movie. As one of the rationales for why the heroes need to get reined in.
Yeah.
Look at all the destruction there.
Yeah.
You know, the Punisher killing, you know, tons of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're starting to really fill out aspects of the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I would like to see some of these actors and characters play a bigger role in some of those other movies. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, tying it all together a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these, it comes into two areas. You either have a lot of these things feeling very self-contained, or you wind up with something like the Avengers or Captain America Civil War, like everybody shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Or most of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a season where, first season, very graphic violent at the beginning and it trailed off. This less graphic violent overall, but it was spread out throughout. And there were quite a few scenes where...
There were some where I had to cover my eyes with both hands instead of just one.
Oh, same here.
And I would like to file an objection to the person who thinks it's a bright idea to show huge amounts of gore in a scene with subtitles.
Well, for me, there were a couple of scenes with gore where he's picking up a drill. He's interrogating somebody. Telegraph, shield the eyes. Don't need to see that. Yes. I just don't need... Certain things I can't unsee, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see them. But again, when you get some of those where they cut back to a scene with it, that really bothers me. And when they've got that stuff on screen and subtitles, it's like, dudes, you know, you want to tell a harder core story. Personally, I'm not in favor of that, but that's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it with subtitles to where if I want to just shield my eyes and not see that, suddenly I'm missing part of the story in terms of just the dialogue.
Yeah.
And again, there were a couple of times where there were a couple of times like with the Punisher where he was shooting people, the person he was shooting was off camera.
Yes.
So there are a few places they did it really well.
Yeah.
Other places it was very much on camera. But there were also times where, whether you saw it or not, the sound was very evocative of graphic violence.
Yeah.
And again, I'm squeamish, so that's sort of an aspect of these things I really don't like. I thought Jessica Jones had really kind of toned that down to a reasonable level.
Mm-hmm.
Here, there was one or two places where they had some graphic violence where it's like, you know, you kind of had to have that.
Yeah.
The scene at the end where the guy gets beheaded, I didn't care for, but
I was waiting for it, I'll admit.
The guy had gotten up from a couple of deaths before.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Now, I will admit, because of how he was beheaded and where the weapon went to immediately afterwards, I did promptly ask you if there can be only one.
Yeah. First season, we get the one fight scene in the hallway.
Yes.
It was just brilliantly done. This season, we get one in a stairwell.
Yeah.
Going down, that again was just brilliantly done. It had a lot of just some great action. It was violent, but not gory.
As I recall, that was the one with a gun duct taped to his right hand, and his left hand had a handcuff locked onto a chain. And what amazed me about it was they managed to cut it together to where it looked like several very long takes put together, but that chain, he was in full control of it. It never got caught on the banisters or anywhere it shouldn't.
I think there were quite a few aspects of that where the chain had to be digital.
True.
But what I loved about that scene is it felt like it just went on forever.
Yes.
And there are a couple of times where clearly they have cuts, but they're the type of cuts that, as a trained TV and movie watcher, it feels like there isn't a cut.
Yes.
I mean, I once had a discussion with a coworker on my last job where he was saying just how great it was they did all this in one take. I'm like, no, they cut like five times in that. You know, because it was something that was a glance object cut. Look at the person, look at what they're looking at, look back at the person kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if, I don't say if you're not paying attention.
No, but it's what we've been trained to see.
We're so used to that we just fluidly kind of erase the cut, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what had happened in that scene. And there are a few of those sorts of things in that stairwell scene where we cut from one side to another or whatever. It's mm-hmm. Not literally a continuous take.
No, but they cut it together so it would feel like one.
Exactly.
And I really respect not just the choreography, but the editing on scene.
Yeah. That, again, whoever designed that scene, that stairwell, how they were going to film it, all the action, just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few other places throughout the series that that they had that level of stuff, but there were also a few places, and the final episode was one of them, where time almost seemed to stop.
Yes. I actually asked you about that one point in the final episode.
We get a scene where they're being Daredevil and Elektra are being chased by ninjas on almost all sides. We see a bunch of them running across rooftops, and they're about to go up to the rooftop to fight them, but they pause for a very heartfelt discussion.
They did put a crossbar.
Well, that was for the people down below.
Yes, yes, but my point is they didn't just close the door behind them. They made something for the people to bang against periodically during their 3 or 4 minute heart-to-heart talk.
What I didn't get is why the people on the roof just stopped and stood around waiting for them to come out.
Well, because apparently they had chosen their battlefield.
On the far end of a roof.
Yes.
That they had just run across.
Yes, yes.
So it's as if they had started on the close side, ran to the far side so Daredevil and Electric could come out so they could rush towards them.
Yes, because why would you shoot fish in a barrel right at the point they're going to come out of the stairs at? Because
it's easy fishing. So there were a few things like that. Sergeant Mahoney, or Officer Mahoney, Detective Mahoney, he gets a promotion really well used throughout the course of the season.
I loved watching his progression. First of all, when we watched the first episode, I was hoping he'd be back.
Mm-hmm.
But then just watching him consistently be well used episode after episode, and him having a career path, if you will, throughout the arc.
Not just a career path, but also an important role in the story when he's pointing out somebody like Punisher was inevitable because of Daredevil and people who are kind of following in his mm-hmm. footsteps. And he said most of them are just, you know, inept losers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of mass murder was inevitable because.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's telling, you know, Murdoch, Nelson, and Page this, they all kind of take that to heart in various ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I liked the scene towards the end where he was pointing out to Daredevil, you know, how sad is it when you're the only person I feel I can trust mm-hmm. with what happened?
Yeah. No, his character, while minor in the first season, was
charismatic in the first season.
Was well used in the first season.
Yeah.
But much better used here and became more instrumental here.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly needs to come back for next season.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine there won't be a next season.
Yeah.
Really, at this point, they could do a Daredevil season 3, a Punisher season 1, and an Elektra season 1 if they wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done a great job casting.
Don't forget my idea for a Night Nurse season 1, because she could do it.
Absolutely, I think a little harder sell.
Yeah.
Whereas more the others, I think, are
creative sell.
Huh?
More creative sell. You'd have to have a more solid plan if she's the one linking what's going on.
I think so, but while you could do it with her, if you had... The thing is, you start needing actors from the other shows, which makes it a little harder to shoot, and or you need to start bringing in other street-level characters,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense to do,
mm-hmm.
but again, makes that a very different feeling show.
If you could do a 6 or 7 episode arc that was kind of a life in Marvel's New York, with her as the glue...
I think you could do that, but I think the Netflix stuff tends to be, again, that 12-hour novel.
Very true.
And Night Nurse almost seems like a collection of short stories.
Yeah.
So certainly the actress could do it, no question about it. But whether it fits the style of storytelling they're doing with these Netflix shows, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
But they've been building up a fun sub-universe here.
Mm-hmm.
That seeing some of those characters interact a little would be cool.
I was surprised Fisk came back.
Yes.
Well used, well done. I think intellectually I knew we were going to have Punisher and Elektra, but I don't think I really realized how many more substantial characters we were going to have this season, if that makes sense.
Well, Stick had a bigger presence this season than last, and again, we've got a number of different mob boss type groups or whatever. It feels like a very rich
mm-hmm.
show in terms of characters and how well they fleshed out this universe.
And they've really created a sense of Hell's Kitchen.
Absolutely. Everything from Josie's Bar, the policed precinct, the New York Bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we definitely start to get a sense of what this neighborhood is like.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes more so than others.
Mm-hmm.
I felt we got more of that almost at the beginning, where you've got a very full client roster in the offices of, and, you know, here's the different, you know, the bananas and different food dishes they're paying with.
Well, that was before the DA put them on the hit list.
Right. Although what was interesting this season was we also got a really good law, you know, court scene. Court case.
Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing our attorneys as in the courtroom lawyers.
Yeah. Well, and it also really underscored some of the things that they've done over the years in the Daredevil comic of when Matt feels the justice system has failed, he goes and fixes it as Daredevil. It's like, isn't that kind of a odd thing for a lawyer to do? But also the dynamic between Matt and Foggy, where Foggy is often left holding the bag on the law firm
mm-hmm.
because Matt's either out being Daredevil or recovering from being Daredevil, just the recuperation stuff.
Yeah.
And when he's basically, Foggy's told Karen at the beginning, I told her you drink, which is why you've gotten bruised and all this stuff.
You're a clumsy drunk.
Yeah. Because how else to explain the absences, the injuries, and things like that? And there were a number of scenes where, based on how Matt was acting and what Matt and we know Karen has been told, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, it does fit the facts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was interesting, too, when Elektra was kind of, whether it was on purpose or accident, eavesdropping
mm-hmm.
on the case, and she decided to take a page out of Matt's / Daredevil's book. And when you aren't getting what you want in the courtroom, you take it to the vigilante side. And she accidentally tanked their case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, it was kind of funny to see Daredevil furious with Elektra.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't understand the law and the legalities.
It's okay if he does it, but not when she does it for him, kind of a...
Well, because she did it wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was kind of the, if he had taken it out of the courtroom, he wouldn't have done it in a coercing a witness kind of way.
Yeah. Again, Daredevil has his code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And while some of it's not always clearly spelled out, there's a lines he will and won't cross. And they did an excellent job setting up the Punisher the same way.
Well, and that's what I was just thinking. Several times Karen seemed to be explaining that aspect of Punisher to people. But, you know, he has his rules. He doesn't do this. And I was already thinking, I don't think the Punisher killed the DA and stuff when he came and saved her in the apartment because he was after answers and information.
Yeah.
You know, it was believable to me when he would take the automatic weapon and just spray bullets at the people he knew were guilty and needed to die. But when he needed more information and was accused of spraying bullets at the people who could answer the questions, that didn't make sense.
Well, again, with the DA's death, that was shot from, you know, across the street coming from another building or whatever, he'd already been established as being a really good sniper.
Yeah.
That's not the sort of situation where he would have used a automatic gun.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been bang. She would have fallen, and then it's like, well, oh, she's just been shot. We see the hole through the window behind her.
Well, and more than once, they had said he'd been trained. The one shot, one kill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the whole district attorney thing, I thought, was an interesting plot line, etc. I don't remember the DA's first name. Reyes was the last name.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if she was based on one of the characters from the comics.
Because
at one point, Murdoch was getting essentially prosecuted by a district attorney for being Daredevil. And if I've got the right character, because I'm trying to remember if that district attorney was Reyes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in one of the recent volumes. They become an item, and then new number one, they wind up in San Francisco for a bit as a law firm over there because he had been disbarred in New York, but while he couldn't get a new license, he could go back to a state where he was still on the bar, which California happened to fit. It's convoluted and confusing. And this Daredevil, this Matt Murdock, would never do that. He's a New Yorker hard.
He is.
Hard and solid. You know, it's just that is who he is.
And he uses that knowledge about himself to understand Fisk and successfully threaten Fisk.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Well, I love that scene, just like I loved the bit with Foggy a couple of times, where when we first see the district attorney, Foggy really pushes back of, you can't do what you're claiming to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain times where the guys just have not only the legal acumen, but the debate acumen.
Yes.
You know, again, Foggy in the ER talking down the gang guys from beating each other to crap or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of scenes where Foggy really shines.
Definitely. It's funny because as much as I don't like where Foggy ended the season, you know, not working Nelson and Murdoch, which has been shut down.
We're not totally sure. He got the job offer.
Well, that's my point.
It's implied he's probably going to take it.
Whether or not he's going to take that, the fact that Nelson and Murdoch is shut down and he's potentially looking for a job elsewhere, not my choice position for the ending of the season for that law firm.
No, because they certainly end the season on a note where next season can't kind of pick up where this one did of they walk into the law firm in the morning and wackiness ensues sort of thing. Yeah. Because, again, they've more or less split up the law firm.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the office.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends how quickly the next season would take place after this. Because it's only been a couple of months since the last season. But yeah. How much did they pay it up? You know, does the landlord want them to go or really believe they'll stick it together? I mean, there are ways they could play that. But then also the, I don't want to say the ending scene, because there were so many epilogue scenes here. There were like 50, it seemed like.
That was funny because I kept thinking, don't end here. Oh, good. No, don't end there either. Okay, what? No.
It felt like they could have labeled the last episode the epilogues.
Yes, but I didn't like any of them.
One of the many, and it might have been the very last one, again, I've lost track, was when Matt basically shows the helmet to Karen and it's I am Daredevil.
That was the very, very final moment.
A la I am Iron Man.
Yes.
So where things pick up from there
mm-hmm.
is going to be very different.
Well, especially since Karen is de facto working at the newspaper.
Yes. Well, she's almost taking the role of
Ben Urich,
who they should not have killed off last season.
Yeah. The boss, the editor, whatever he was at the newspaper, he stepped up. He did really well this season.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I didn't miss Ben Urich constantly.
I think if they had killed off the editor instead of Ben, they would have had to tweak a little last season, but I think it could have worked. Just had Ben go into hiding or something mm-hmm. as things blew over. And then have Ben take over as editor and do what the editor did this time. But again, the actor who's playing the editor just did such a wonderful job.
He did. He did.
And at first, when she goes in for some information, I'm like, okay, he's there for a nice callback. That's all we're going to see. But no, he becomes,
mm-hmm.
you know, recurring at that point. And it goes back to, again, the depth of this world.
Yeah.
You know, there are regular people these guys see.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the universe seem a lot more cohesive, a lot more real than it might otherwise. I mean, you watch some TV shows, and other than the regulars, it's like it's a ghost town.
My pet peeve is shows where I joke, there's only one writer who knows so-and-so has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or, you know, anything of that nature.
I wasn't paying very close attention to who wrote each episode and stuff, but I did notice there were quite a few writers involved with this. Mm. And for a regular TV show of 20-plus episodes a season, I get it. You need mm-hmm. a writer's room, whatever. For something like this, I'm a little surprised by it, in so much as it feels written like a novel, as we've said a number of times. So do you need 13, 14, or I don't know how many they've got writers here?
I wonder, though, if some of that is they come together as a writer's room, plot out the season, kind of divide up whose strong suit is this type of episode, that type of episode, and then each of them go work the script they've been given, come back to the writer's room, and then say, okay, who's got the law dialogue down pat? You now get my script to pump up the law dialogue.
I'm curious what duration of time they do the writing for the season over.
Mm.
Because this strikes me as the kind of show, your style of show, I should say, you need to have all 13 episodes written before you shoot that first one.
I kind of hope so.
Because I can't imagine it would have this sense of beginning, middle, and end and solidity to it
mm-hmm.
if they hadn't written it that way.
You know, I'm not going to say that I assume they have final pages done on day one. They may still be going through their pink and their blue pages to tweak, is the law dialogue exactly right, etc.
I expect revisions,
yeah.
But I expect the majority of the writing. I would say
yeah.
if 95 to 98% of what we see on screen
yeah.
isn't there before they've shot the first scene,
yeah.
I'd be surprised and impressed.
Yeah.
Because again, things really pull together tight, and things they set up in the first episode have a nice solid ending at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like they've kind of shifted direction midstream. And to your point of, well, one writer may get most of the credit, how they all work together, holds true in so much as it feels like a consistent tone and style, and the characters talk like the characters throughout the 13-episode
mm-hmm.
run.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just really have this nagging feeling that there's somebody who's got that flair for Foggy's attorney slash lawyer scenes. Because there's this mode he goes into when he kind of whips out that law degree and puts you where he wants you.
Certainly they have somebody who's at least an advisor in that respect, if not one of the writers themselves. Well, I imagine there's a writer who's done legal shows before.
It's more than having the jargon, though. It's a combination of the jargon and the attitude.
But that attitude seems reminiscent of something you would have seen on The Practice, Boston Legal, almost any other major court show.
Yeah, there's a, you know, you may think you can roll over me, and you may think I'm the bumpkin, but, yeah. But they play it very nicely with Foggy.
Yes, but I think there's also somebody in the writer's room who probably really excels at the, okay, Matt and Foggy are going at it. Mm-hmm. Or we need a little bit more romantic dialogue, or we need something.
They had someone who seemed to really understand the editor's dialogue. That's not the story.
Yeah. And again, that's what impressed me, is the advice the editor was giving Karen as a newbie writer or whatever sounded like really good advice.
Yeah.
You know, likewise, the advice that the minister at the service for Grotto gave Matt felt really good. And again, we'd seen him last season. The fact they're able to get so many of these people, Turk and a few of the other characters, coming back, again, I don't think it's particularly hard. It seems like really good roles, and most of them would be foolish to say no thanks, but no thanks, you know.
Well, and Turk, to your point about, you know, began at the beginning of Payoff Slayer, Turk was a prime example of that.
Yeah, they had, again, there's a consistency and a continuity and cohesiveness that other shows have to varying degrees. Some seem to completely lack it because they're so episodic. Others accumulate a history. But there are still some shows you could, again, shuffle episodes in a season, shuffle seasons, it doesn't matter. This feels like we've just read the second novel of the Daredevil series.
Yeah.
And one that could double as the first novel of a Punisher kind of a deal, or Elektra.
Yeah.
So I'm very impressed with what they're doing at Netflix. Still a bit dismayed by the graphic violence at times. But there's an aspect of the violence that's needed. I don't think the on-screen gore is needed.
Exactly.
And I think they could open the audience up a little bit more if they'd tone that down. Yeah. But that's clearly not what they're doing.
There's a way to place it off camera and still make it painfully clear what you saw or didn't see.
And again, there were times they did that. There were just other times they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which frustrated me.
I do want to mention that Finn, the leader of the Irish group, we sat there doing that first time he came on going, wait a sec, he's familiar, but he doesn't look right.
He played Daytac Tar on Defiance?
Yes.
So here he comes in with an Irish accent, beard, mustache.
Red hair.
Red hair. Versus on Defiance, he's got no beard, no mustache, white skin, white hair, and playing an alien with no Irish accent.
Yes.
Great actor, though. Terrific guy.
Oh, he does a great job, though. I want to know how he knew which coffin was which coffin, because they didn't seem to be labeled. I know, movie magic, I get it, but...
But they've done a really good job casting here. The one who played the Colonel...
Yes.
We've seen as General Eiling on...
Oh, Arrow.
Arrow and or Flash.
Flash. Sorry, Flash. Sorry.
Possibly both. I forget the actor's name, and I should know this. I knew it at one point.
He was really good as the Colonel here. And one of the things I loved was in the courtroom when the DA got her chance with him.
Oh, yeah. God, I love that.
You know,
and Nelson, Foggy has just questioned the guy about, okay, what do you know about Frank? And he's telling this great war story.
How he got a medal.
How he got a medal by disobeying, essentially, the officer, commanding officer made a mistake and he picked up the pieces.
And having told the commanding officer before the mistake was made, don't do that. It'll be a mistake.
And then the DA, she gets up, cross-examines. Oh, that's a wonderful story. But You know, how could you know if, because you weren't there. He's like, no, I was the commanding officer. He said was wrong, and I was.
Yes.
And you could just see her, oh, crap, I've totally blown my cross-examination.
Well, and it reminded me of the one rule that I've heard from trial lawyers, which is never ask a question you don't already know the answer to.
They address that afterwards when the assistant DA and her are kind of mm-hmm. conferring back at the table. And he's like, how did you not know this? The names were redacted.
That's right. That's what they said. Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, the quality of the writing on that.
Yeah.
It wasn't telegraphed. That's what was going to happen. It was a great kind of turnaround on that. And, well, shouldn't she have known better? Immediately asked and answered.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they had covered leading up to that the fact that she was withholding that information from the press releases about the guy we arrested. Not saying he's a military war hero, not even acknowledging his military service, saying he had no family.
And some of that really came out through the scenes with Karen and the editor.
Mm-hmm.
This would have played into the story she's trying to sell, so why didn't she mention it?
Yeah.
And that's when the editor starts saying, well, wait a sec, you've got something here.
Yeah.
I love the line the editor had later of, I've been getting tons of calls about where am I getting my information. You're on to something here.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what did you say? So I was taking the credit myself, of course.
Yes.
The general, though, that actor, I first really noticed him because he does a ton of voiceover stuff, voice work for cartoons and whatnot.
Mm.
He was in the Jackie Chan Adventures as the leader of the spy organization Jackie worked with.
How funny.
He also, I think, did the voice of Lex Luthor. He was on a couple of other shows. I think Carnival and one or two others. I want to say Powers Booth, but I don't think that's right. I really ought to know this. I knew at one point this actor's name. I'm a fan of his voiceover work, and his live action stuff is great as well. And again, he had a not major role, but it was in a number of episodes and played a pivotal part in the plot.
Yeah.
There are a few characters on here that get a noticeable amount of screen time and don't have either a really good scene or, you know, a serious contribution to the overall story.
See, I was thinking I recognized him from Sleepy Hollow. I'm trying to figure out. I'm not positive if that's right, but Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown, that's the name. Definitely Clancy Brown. You're right.
Google to the rescue.
Yeah. Again, voiceover work on some of the DC stuff and the Jackie Chan Adventures. Which is, again, a terrific cartoon series available. I'm pretty sure on DVD. I think I've got a lot of it on DVD, if not all of it. But it was fun seeing him.
Definitely.
So their casting, I think, is just really top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography, the action sequences, some of that just, none of it's bad. Some of it, though, is just utterly amazing.
Well, it's interesting. During the fight leading up to Elektra's death, I was noticing that Daredevil was having, I don't want to say his typical fight, but the moves I expect from Daredevil, using the baton, mm-hmm. the flips, that kind of thing. But Elektra's part of the fight really intrigued me because she was trying to get to Daredevil to help him and protect him. She was a little torn between the two sides, being told she could be part of the Hand, she didn't want to be part of the Hand. There was almost a ballet aspect at times during her part of the fight because she would run towards him and two people would grab her arms to pull her back. And the way she would kind of throw her head forward, adding that extra flair and drama.
They clearly gave a lot of thought to the fight choreography.
Yeah.
Because I think there were a couple of times where the two are almost moving in parallel. Other times they're very much bouncing off each other kind of a thing. And again, the implied history they've got and the history we actually see because they do some flashbacks this season.
Mm-hmm.
With most TV shows that have action, you'll have, you know, two, maybe three fight scenes that are kind of the set pieces or whatever. Maybe usually for a TV show, maybe one or two. Movie, you'll get the three or so major fight scenes, you know. Whereas here over the course of the season, we get tons of them in each individual episode.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the one or two or three that really, again, for me, it was the stairway scene that was just so impressively done.
I actually really enjoyed the fight sequence where Daredevil went down to rescue Punisher from the Irish. And what I liked was he gets down to where the Punisher is, and he's fighting the Irish while keeping the Punisher from killing the people he's fighting.
Yes, that was one of the better scenes. I would agree with that. Again, the use of the batons was really well done. How Daredevil is multitasking on that.
Yeah.
The rooftop scene earlier on with Daredevil versus Punisher,
mm-hmm.
I thought was really well done. So there are a couple that really, to me, stand out above just we get a ton of great action in this.
Yeah.
So I'm sure their second unit or whatever was doing just some of the action sequences kept really busy.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of this. But I think they really are raising the bar as to what can and should be expected out of a TV season.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we watch a lot of things that are, you know, 13 episode lengths. Because that's common for, you know, like a Doctor Who or a Sci-Fi channel or, you know, something like that. And often it's 13 really good episodes.
Yeah.
Whereas here, not only are they really good episodes, they feel very substantial.
And essential. You can't skip an episode.
Absolutely. There's no filler, but they also, again, play so well as individuals, but also as that whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
each episode ended at a point where if you had said last night, okay, that's it, we gotta call it a night. Okay. They came to enough of a conclusion with enough of a, you know, there's more to come.
Well, they end on a natural story beat for, okay, let's pause for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Either end a chapter, either we've just had a reveal, or we've just had a good moment. And yes, we may pick up right on the heels of that next time, or lead back into that. Which is part of why I liked when they would go back a little and show kind of the other person's vantage point getting into that scene. Oh, mm-hmm. That's where we left off. Got it.
Now, there was something that happened, I want to say early in episode one, where, I forget exactly what it was, but I remember I looked over you and I was teasing, well, season's over. That was fast.
Oh, it was when Daredevil got shot.
That's right. That's right. He got shot on headpiece.
10, 15 minutes in, maybe, he gets shot in the head, goes off the building. And I'm like, well, that was a quick season.
Yeah, really. Punisher wins. Season over.
But that goes to one of the other characters we haven't mentioned yet, and that's Melvin.
I love Melvin!
Melvin is the guy who's built the suit for Daredevil, repairs the helmet, gives him the new billy club, does a lot of... He's in maybe 15 minutes out of the entire season.
Oh, he's wonderful, though.
But he's a great actor, great character. I love the suit he puts together for Elektra as well.
I love that his basic logic and theory is you protect Hell's Kitchen, you protect me, so I will protect you.
And yeah, there's a very de facto quid pro quo there of we're protecting each other, we're buds. Yeah. I got your back, you got mine.
Yeah.
And particularly when he's giving the baton, he's got this nice, what looks like a case for a pool cue or something. And I love how he has cases for everything.
Yes.
And the guy takes pride in his work. He's got the presentation down.
Yeah.
But he's showing off the billy club with the noonshuck type thing. You can do it as a grappling hook. It does all these things. And he's like, you know, because Daredevil's like, I don't say whatever. And he's like, you know, Melvin is plugged in enough with Hell's Kitchen to know all of the things mm-hmm. Daredevil has done, how he's protecting the neighborhood, doing the right things. He is a hero,
mm-hmm.
you know. And is got his back.
Well, and Melvin has promised Betsy, I guess it is, I'm not going to break the law anymore. So
yeah.
He gets a little nervous occasionally when Daredevil comes calling with the, now we're not breaking the law, right? I'm protecting you, you're protecting me, and all is good and legal.
I think in a future season, hopefully not next, hopefully a ways out, Betsy's going to die.
Ooh.
And because at one point we get the saw blade or whatever he's got when he thinks Daredevil has brought somebody. It's like, I wouldn't bring anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody would have followed Daredevil. Melvin Potter's character, I think Potter's the last name, in the comics is, I'm thinking it's the Gladiator. I could be wrong on it. He is just this gaudy costume kind of a thing. But he's got on the back of his gloves with wrist things, buzz saws.
Ugh.
And it's one of those just kind of, you know, reach out and it's
attack.
One of those things. It's a cool sounding thing for a comic character.
Yeah.
It's not the least bit practical.
Yeah, I bet.
Because if you put your wrist up, you suddenly chewed in, you know, it's like...
Yeah, really.
But I would be disappointed if before the series totally ends, we didn't get that.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, then... Daredevil's got to fight him, but knows he doesn't want to fight him because they're buds, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Talks him down, gets him help, because Melvin's a little challenged.
Yes.
But I, again, love seeing that character back, and that's one of, again, like we've said before, one of the many things that really builds up the depth of this universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people Daredevil and the others can call on when they need help.
Yeah.
So... I thought it was a terrific season. I'm definitely looking forward to more of Daredevil, and I'm positive we're going to get more. I can't imagine we won't.
Yeah,
don't know when. Maybe another year or something. They had a trailer for I did air quotes there, as you could all see, for Luke Cage that lasted what, 30 seconds maybe?
I think it said 23 seconds.
And I think at least three of it was the Luke Cage logo going up. Another 4 or 5 was the September 30 or whatever. So
yeah, really.
It was short, succinct.
It was a fraction of a scene. And don't get me wrong, it was funny. But nothing in there told you plot or premise, unless you count the premise as being big guy with...
Who's bulletproof.
Budget for clothing.
What got me, though, is they could have snagged scenes from Jessica Jones.
Yes.
And built a pretty impressive reminder of what had gone on there, and then add a tag scene for here's what's going next.
Well, and to that end, when we first hit play on this, I'm looking at the screen, and I'm like, it's not showing an episode. What is it showing? It's like it's showing an Uber commercial. What is this? And you finally clued me in. Oh, it's showing us a recap of season one.
Yeah.
I thought, well, yeah, that is pretty cool for people who don't remember what happened and where it left off. That's really smart on their part.
One other thing to note about Netflix is it's got the, if you've played a few episodes in succession, it'll automatically pause it. In case you've, I don't know, fallen asleep or something. Invariably what happens when we marathon this is we'll watch a couple of episodes, but we usually pause between like every other one to either get some more soda, go to the bathroom, get some snacks, whatever. And then we come back, so we've watched two, paused, come back.
Hit play,
go for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then it automatically pauses.
Are you still alive?
Yeah, just checking you're an actual still person here watching. I'm like, I just clicked play minutes ago.
Now, when we let it run through two episodes straight in a row without even skipping the ending credits and saying, go on, play the next episode, it doesn't ask us if we're still alive. It takes it on faith.
Invariably, when I just click play, it's funny. But, you know, hey, that's Netflix for you.
It's technology for you.
So, I'd like to see this again plug in a little bit more solidly with the rest of the cinematic universe, but... It's so great on its own, I'm fine with it not.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard somewhere that the pro and the con of the Defenders, I guess is the title of it,
yeah,
is they're going to bring a bunch of these guys together. So mm-hmm. That's the pro. The con is that it's making it hard for them to figure out when they're going to film seasons of people doing their individual shows. Because they're trying to coordinate a filming time wherein everyone's available to do the one show.
Yeah, I do think that is a challenge. And, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do on that.
It'll be interesting to see, based on how Defenders does with the audience, if that becomes an ongoing challenge.
I think we're still probably a year away from getting the Defenders. We're not getting Luke Cage until September, which seemed a little further than I was expecting. I don't know where they're at on Iron Fist, but that's one of the other characters.
Well, I know when people were asking why didn't the renewal of Jessica Jones get announced immediately, mm-hmm. immediately, please, 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 Defenders was blamed. Because they were trying to figure out, based on when that filmed, when/if Jessica Jones' second season could be filmed, because they didn't want to announce a show that they couldn't conceivably film.
Yeah, I think that is going to be a challenge going forward. The other thing is once they've got Luke Cage and Iron Fist, I think it'd be fun to do a Heroes for Hire series, which is the team up of those two. Literally, they're heroes for hire.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes towards, again, how do you do the scheduling on all of this? Yeah. And what are the other actors doing and stuff like that. I still would love to see as a end of credit scene or whatever in one of the Marvel films, somebody, you know, needing a lawyer and then Murdoch and Nelson show up or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But yeah, this is just terrific stuff. Netflix is just doing an amazing job with these properties. I hope they continue to do this with the quality they're doing and see no reason why the quality would suddenly shift or anything. They're doing a great job.
I agree.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.